Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts.
Welcome into episode 206 of Blue Jays Nation Radio. You got Coombsy and you got Brett. Tyler is away. We don't know where he is. He kind of just disappeared. We don't know when he's going to be back, but he's just wandered off somewhere. So it's the two of us here to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays handing the New York Yankees their first series loss of the season. And Brett, I'm not going to lie to you. If you had told me a few days ago that the Jays were going to take 2 out of 3 against New York here, I'd have been feeling really good, but for some reason on this Thursday morning after that loss on Wednesday afternoon, I find myself feeling a little pissed off. What do you think? How was that series?
It was a good series for the Jays overall. Obviously getting or handing the New York Yankees their first series loss of the year, kind of similar to what they did last year with the Tampa Bay Rays when they ended the Rays' long little streak. They're one of the best teams in baseball at the time. Same here with the Yankees, kind of killed their momentum a little bit until the third game. It was good to see the offense kind of start to jump a little more. You got some good pitching from Yusei Kikuchi as well. That last game, though, of the series just felt like it's one of those games where it's basic Toronto Blue Jays baseball. It almost felt like I almost threw down some money on the New York Yankees live comeback. You kind of felt it. The Blue Jays couldn't get their bats going late in that game to put it away, and it ended up costing them. It just felt like one of those classic Blue Jays blow it late in the game type games, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it's a frustrating one. I mean, look, everybody was pissed off after that one because I think even though they got no hit earlier in the season and then they almost got, it was like one or two hits a couple of games later, they wound up winning that one. There's been some frustrating losses earlier in the season, but that third one to New York probably takes the cake because of the context. It's the Yankees. You had a chance to sweep. Everybody was pissed off. Of course, the Blue Jays won the first two games of the series, first one by a score of 3-1, and then an edgy one there, 5-4 victory in the second game, and then they can't hold the 4-2 lead in the ninth inning of the Wednesday game. New York explodes with a 4-run ninth inning. But before we get into the negatives, because I think we're going to spend a lot of time on this podcast focusing on what happened in the third game, let's talk about all the good stuff, because it wasn't that bad. It was 2 out of 3 from the Yankees, and we got to take a step back. This is positive. Chris Bassitt had probably what was his best start of the season. The Hound of the Mound went 6 1/3 innings pitched and allowed just one earned run. And now his ERA is down to 4.03, which is great because Bassitt's first two outings of the season, there was the rough one in Tampa with the grand slam. And then there was another one in Houston where, you know, things didn't go all that well for the veteran. And yeah, he was the Hound of the Mound in this one, a really good outing. And that's back to back two very strong outings from Chris Bassitt.
Yeah, and we talked about a lot with when Gausman went down, you need to have those not supplementary pitchers, because Chris Bassitt is far from being a secondary or supplementary pitcher, but just being able to have the other guys step up in the way that Chris Bassitt has. And I believe it was you who said on the last episode, he's almost like a second ace on this team too. So being able to have your guys be able to continually perform and turn it over to the bats as well. If you're giving the bats some sort of opposite of a cushion, I guess, because you're not, you can't score runs on defense, but being able to limit the pillow or limit the comeback that you need from a Blue Jays team that seems like you're going to have to do a lot, it has been more than positive from Chris Bassett. So, I mean, we know the pitching situation right now with the Jays and that kind of pseudo fifth starter right now, but no, this is extremely positive from Chris Bassett.
The biggest hit in that game, I think, was from Alejandro Kirk. He's my second up that I have here in the third inning. He came through with a double, and it was his first extra base hit of the season. And all told in the series, he goes 2 for 5 and draws 2 walks. There's been a lot of talk so far early in the season. Alejandro Kirk hasn't been batting quite as well as you'd expect for him. And that's a big, you know, that's obviously a big narrative because last year didn't have the same offense you'd think. But to be fair to him, he played in virtually almost every single game for the first bit of the season when Danny Jansen was on the shelf. Now Jansen's back. He gets activated at the start of this series, and Kirk has himself a pretty nice series at the plate. What'd you see from him in this one? Do you see that this looks like a hitter who's about to turn a corner?
I'm hoping so. I didn't quite see enough to be uber positive in his at bats about turning this around, but he walked twice, brought in a run as well. That discipline's coming up too. I think he kind of felt the Jano heat a little bit, not necessarily. I mean, him and Jano are obviously buddies, and you're close when you're a platoon like that. And you're close when you kind of make it through a butcher's knife like they did a couple winters ago, when they traded Gabby Moreno. So it's positive. I just want to see more from Alejandro Kirk. I'm so disappointed from the last couple of years that I've seen from Alejandro Kirk, that I'm not positive that he's going to be able to become that 2021 hitter that he was, that all-star that he was a couple of years ago. I think that he needs more quality at bats. That's the biggest thing for him, is being able to find his pitch, not go fishing so often in curveballs in the dirt or anything like that. He just needs to become a smarter pitcher, or smarter hitter, excuse me, kind of similar to Danny Jansen. Sometimes I find him a little better with the bat throughout the strike zone there, and getting the barrel through the strike zone. I think the biggest thing will be for Alejandro Kirk is sustainability and being able to do that again in the next series, the next series, the next series, right? He's not going to be perfect for the rest of the year, but just kind of building off of what he was able to do with the Yankees.
And the third one that I have here is, we're moving on to the second game now. Yusei Kikuchi had another great start against the New York Yankees. He went 6 innings and allowed just 1 earned run on 4 hits and 1 walk, and he struck out 9 batters. And across his last 4 start against the Yankees, there's 2 this year and there was 2 last year in 2023, he's gone 22 1/3 innings and has allowed just 3 runs against New York. It's a great thing for the Blue Jays to have a pitcher who is weirdly good against the New York Yankees. And it's not necessarily a platoon that are a handedness advantage that you'd expect from Kikuchi, because, you know, the New York Yankees, of course, Aaron Judge in the middle of their lineup, big right-handed hitter who generally tends to mash lefty pitching. But for whatever reason, you say Kikuchi's got this thing sorted out and he dominates the Yankees. So that's positive. My other plus here was Bo and Vlad both coming up clutch in the game, though they didn't really have many huge moments throughout the series. It was in this one here specifically, tied 1-1 in the fourth. Vladdy hits a bases loaded single right up the middle, drives in 2 runs, and then up 4-1 in the sixth inning, Bo extended Toronto's lead with a single, which wound up being the winning run because they allowed a couple more runs, won the game 5-4. So those were a couple positive things I thought from game two. There's some more positives from game three that I would probably have put as ups if not for what wound up happening. And I think just because of the loss, I'm just going to shove all this into one kind of down category. It's just game three altogether. And this is unfortunate that they wound up losing this one, because there was 2 real positives that seemed like great stepping stones for the Jays, which was Kevin Gausman, after 2 difficult starts where he did not look like Kevin Gausman, goes 5 innings and allows only 1 earned run. He's on pace for the win, thanks largely to Dalton Varsho in this one, hits a 2-run bomb in the second inning and then another solo home run in the seventh inning. He's got 4 home runs in the season now. So Kevin Gausman, that's a huge one. I've said this before, if the Blue Jays are going to lose any one player on the roster for an extended period of time, I think Gausman's the one I don't want to lose. So seeing him pitch well is incredibly encouraging.
Yeah, it was funny. Right at almost around first pitch, I was about to post a clip from our show from episode 205 talking about Kevin Gausman, just talking about, I wish we could get more from him. And I kind of held off. I was like, let's see what we see from Kevin Gausman before we really start to hammer on him again. But got out of that bases loaded jam. I think it was the first or second inning there, and was able to ride the wave for the rest of the game, and allowing the offense to do their thing, not having to worry about playing from behind and having comeback baseball once again. That's uber positive from Kevin Gausman. The other thing too with Kevin Gausman, outside of getting out of that major jam in the first couple of innings, were the walks too. He only walked three guys. I know that's not fantastic when you take a look at Yusei Kikuchi earlier on in the series, but three walks for him, finding that control once again. Those walks weren't necessarily bad walks. It wasn't a runner on second, you're moving guys over, it's just, I don't mind what I saw from Kevin Gausman. And again, same thing from Alejandro Kirk, just build off it for the next series.
So those are kind of two positives from the third game, and this would have been a six up, six down, six positive things. We're just good vibes only on the pod, but the final two innings of that game didn't go how you would have hoped. Yeah, they had chances to kind of add some more runs after the Varsho homer. The Blue Jays loaded the bases with a walk, a single, and another walk. And then Bo Bichette came up, hit a sac fly into foul territory to bring one run home, give them a little bit of a cushion. And then Justin Turner struck out, couldn't push more runs across. An unfortunate one, but can't really complain about Justin Turner, given I'd say he's probably been their most consistent run scorer the entire season. And then the bullpen couldn't hold the lead. Trevor Richards tossed a clean sixth inning. Yenesis Cabrera came in for the seventh, was fine there. In the eighth, he allowed a home run to Juan Soto that made it 4-2. And then in the ninth, because Jordan Romano wasn't available, Jimmy Garcia had pitched three games in a row, Eric Swanson made his first appearance of the season in a save situation against the New York Yankees and immediately allowed a bomb to Giancarlo Stanton, and then a single and a double after that. Tim Meza comes into the game, cannot put out the fire. He allows five more runs to cross. It was just a mess. And people were pissed off about this when they were saying, why are you letting, you know, Swanson pitch in this situation? It's his first game back. Why is he going right in for a close? Tim Meza comes and he's a lefty pitching to Aaron Judge. We already just talked about that. Judge mashes lefties. And the trouble is, was there really more options to go with here? The Blue Jays have leaned pretty heavily into a very injured bullpen early in the season. As mad as I was about this one yesterday, I think with a step back, we can say this was just an unfortunate loss, right? Is this John Schneider doing a bad job managing, or was this just unfortunate?
I think it's a little bit of both. It's funny. I was sitting in my bed after the loss, and I was really trying to rack my mind over what John Schneider could have done different. Like, who else could he have put in that situation? Maybe a flip Meza and Swanson, if that's really the go-to. I don't know. It's not necessarily, I don't want to say it's poor bullpen management, because like you said, you have Romano not really available. You don't have Jimmy Garcia as well. Those are kind of your two late game guys, late inning guys that you want in the game. And if I just was not sold on throwing Eric Swanson in for his first appearance of the season in a high leverage situation. And it obviously didn't work out. I was taking a look at the numbers for the series, and Eric Swanson right now has an 81 ERA. that's almost as bad as Hunter Brown. Like, it was not fantastic. I'm lost for this one. I just don't know how you could have dealt with it differently. And I think a lot of it is just hindsight 2020. It didn't work, so what else could we have done, right? So yeah, I'm not 100% sold on anything you could have done. Just, you lost the game. Yeah, that's, you need your players evidently to be better in those situations.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, it's the New York Yankees you're facing. They're a good team. They have the aspirations of winning the American League East. They've just lost the first two games, and they're not going to roll over and just get swept and leave and just say, ah, we got swept. This is the Yankees we're going up against. And I think that's sort of what leads to so much more of the frustration is we were chatting about this in the Blue Jays Nation Slack channel yesterday after it happened, and there was one comment that was, it seems like the Blue Jays sort of lack a killer instinct, and it was...
Yes.
It was evident last year too in some regards. It's you can't necessarily treat every single game like it's game seven of the World Series, but you just had a series against Colorado. They're pretty bad. You have an off day coming up. You're playing an afternoon game, so there's going to be a decent amount of time off before you jump on the plane and go to San Diego. Maybe this would have been one where you just sort of try and ask a Jimmy Garcia. He's pitching so well. You ask him, just try and push through and pick up that last save, or you bring Romano out again. It's really hard to say. The other thing is Chad Green's day-to-day with an arm issue. We weren't aware of that before the game. But also then again, if Green's got this going on, then why were you in a rush to send Nate Pearson down to AAA before that? I don't know. We're now 3 weeks into the baseball season, and enough has happened that we're willing to get pissed off about stuff, and it's just the natural course of the baseball season.
Yeah, but that's the lack of killer instinct is the biggest thing for me. This sitting and watching this team, as somebody who watches every game, I sit here and I go, this is a mediocre baseball team. They have a couple of real good bats when they really want to be real good bats. But outside of that, you see a bunch of players who just go up to the plate. I don't see a lot of fight from a lot of hitters to really impose themselves in at bats. There's not a lot that I see from the Toronto Blue Jays offensively. The biggest thing is this is offensively. Their pitching is fine. Their pitching is borderline great. It can be borderline great. Their defense has been fantastic as well lately. Not very many errors. And you take a look at what Davis Schneider has been able to do with the glove. You see what Dalton Varsho has been able to do with the glove. That play on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. where he swung back and got Anthony Volpe on the tag at first base. They have good defense, but I just have not seen enough from their offense to really sit there and think, yeah, this is a top-tier offense that can go out there and just straight up beat you.
Yeah, it hasn't been. There was obviously a lot of talk in the offseason. There was a lot of hope. Bowen, Vlad, George Springer, get those guys back to where they have been before, and they were fantastic during spring training. But as we know, spring training is not the real thing. So they were great in Grapefruit League play there. That's a tongue twister. They were great there, but hasn't translated yet. But hey, it's only been 3 weeks. We're, 19 games into a 162 game season. If this were the NFL season, we'd be at what point? Like the end of the first quarter, maybe of the first game of the season, that kind of thing. So plenty of time for things to figure themselves out. Before we go and bring in our special guest, Andrew Stoughton, let's talk about the series they're going to be having right away against the San Diego Padres, which will feature the second career start of one Yariel Rodriguez. He'll go on Friday against Matt Waldron, who has the best ERA of the pitchers the Blue Jays will see in San Diego this weekend at 3.14. And then on Saturday, it's the new staff ace, Jose Berríos, taking his almost one ERA into a match against Yu Darvish, who I almost said was a former Blue Jay, but he is not. There was a whole saga with that where we thought the Blue Jays were going to sign him, and it was a whole bunch of bullshit. Not necessary to get into that, but weird little brain slip for me there. Sunday, it's going to be Chris Bassett going up against an actual former Blue Jay. That's Joe Musgrove, a pitcher that they drafted and they moved to. I think it was Houston in the Jay Happ trade, like in the early 2010s, something like that. Musgrove's got a 6.29 ERA across his first few starts. So, yeah, San Diego, what's our expectation here? The Padres are a weird team. Like, this is a team that a couple of years ago, they went on a deep playoff run. Last year, they went all in and didn't work out at all. And then, of course, in the offseason, they traded away Juan Soto. You're a big San Diego Padres guy. You love the National League West specifically. This is what you're all about. What should we expect here from the Padres? What are they all about now?
first of all, that was a cardinal sin, so thank you for that. they are a weird team. It's the weird thing for me with the San Diego Padres is that they're very boom or bust. It seems like a lot of games they'll either win by 8 runs or they'll lose by 8 runs. It's a strange team, but in a way, I find their offense a little similar to the New York Yankees as well. They have that really good top and middle, top of the middle, I guess, part of the lineup. I mean, Fernando Tatis Jr. looks like he might win the NL MVP at this point right now. Manny Machado hits, there are so many times I see the bat come off Manny, or the ball come off Manny Machado's bat, and I just think that's going 500. There are very, very strong hitters on this team, and also very pesky hitters as well. I really like the way Ha-Seong Kim hits sometimes too. He's just a very pesky player. Who was it? Jerickson Profar as well. When he almost started a bench brawl between the two, the Dodgers and the Padres there. And then had that little spat with Will Smith. Will Smith called him basically irrelevant. And then the next game, he came out and hit a clutch double and really, really helped that team. I believe ended up winning that game too against the Dodgers. So they have pesky hitters. They have strong hitters. And I do think, though, they might struggle a little bit with the uncertainty of Yariel Rodriguez, and especially it being the first game of the series. So the Padres are a funky team. You're either going to beat them by 8 or lose by 8. So we'll see what we get with the Padres here.
Yeah, it's 3 series in a row now the Blue Jays have won. Let's see if they can continue that on the road trip. We will head out quickly for a break, and then when we return, we will talk about the season thus far with Andrew Stoughton of Blue Jays Happy Hour.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
All right. We are back. Andrew Stoughton is here. We are going to talk first about that very frustrating loss against the Yankees. This is really good timing that you're coming on here, because I said it earlier in the show to Brett, and I think he agreed with me. Despite the fact the Blue Jays got no hit in Houston earlier this season, that loss to the Yankees was probably the most maddening one of this season. Would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. Yeah, I mean, it just because it was their game to win, and the fact that they lost it, and the way that they lost it was just incredibly frustrating to watch. You know, we can get into the particulars. I suspect we might, but you know, just like Swanson did not have it, Mesa didn't have it. You know, they didn't go to a right-handed pitcher to face Aaron Judge when the game was tied up, which is, you know, another point of contention. And just, you know, a 2-run lead against that lineup is never safe, I guess. But also, you know, it wasn't the big part of the lineup. It was that middle part that you guys were just talking about. And I think that, yeah, you know, you expect a guy like Erik Swanson, if he's active and he's healthy and he's you know, been deemed ready to go, should be able to get through that and not allow two runs or, you know, the combination of him and Mesa. So it was tough, especially because it just felt like so triumphant and like, so, okay, we're going to sweep the Yankees. This is feeling good. Things are going in the right direction. And then to have that sort of blow up at that moment was especially tough.
Yeah, that's what I think. What's so frustrating about it is mostly just because it was against the Yankees. If this was a series against Cleveland in April or something like that, and they missed having the sweep, people would be like, ah, that's frustrating. But the next day, everybody would be over it. But I've noticed online, people are still pretty pissed off this morning. So I don't want to dive too far into the nitty gritty of it with you, because I think we're just going to go over it ad nauseum. Sometimes relievers don't get it done. As I mentioned to Brett, this is a bullpen that's been taxed pretty heavily this year with the injuries so far. But I want to kind of take it back to a more general conversation about John Schneider. Fans booed him, and then also hitting coach Guillermo Martinez during the home opener intros last week. And there's a lot of angst towards Schneider. And do you think it's justified at all? Like, do you think that this is just people looking for something to be mad about because it's easy? Or why is it that John Schneider has caught so much ire of the fan base? Like,
yeah, I mean, he has to make the decisions, right? So he has to kind of wear them. I get that. I don't think it's justified, but it's just also like nature of the business, nature of the job, right? So I would not be among the people who were booing him. The Guillermo Martinez thing, I think, is completely different, because that's just absurd. And that's just people not understanding how hitting coaches work. Like, it's just a little league conception of what a hitting coach does. It's like, that's not how major league hitting coaches function. And it's not at all his fault, but he has that title. And so people are just booing the title. And people are also, I think, in a lot of ways booing them because Ross Atkins isn't there to be booed, right? He's not walking out on the field. But yeah, the Schneider thing, you know, I like any manager, there's lots of decisions that you could question of his. I think fans are generally unfair, and I think are generally it's too easy for them to think, oh, he made this dumb decision last week, and then this decision's dumb, and I'm convinced that this is dumb, and that's dumb, and that's dumb, and then, so he's dumb, and so he's just everything. You know, it makes the instinct to be thinking the worst of him at all times, when if you actually go back and go like in a granular way through, which I did in a post at the batflip.ca for last night and this morning, you know, if you go in a granular way, you can see that there's a lot of logic to what he's doing, and there's a lot of ways that his hands are tied that people aren't appreciating. But I guess that's just the nature of the thing. And, you know, people hated Charlie Montoyo for a very long time and thought the same things about him. People thought the same things about John Gibbons in both tenures until the team got good. I think there's a lesson there. I think that that's sort of what this stuff is all about. You know, I can't tell anybody to think differently than they do about Schneider. Like, you don't have to like Schneider. And I can't convince anybody to like him. But also, I mean, it's just, one, it's annoying, and two, you would save yourself a lot of grief and wasted energy if you just sort of took a step back and thought a little bit more about how the game of baseball in the year 2024 actually functions, and what a manager's, what levers he actually has to pull. And you know, I think you find that the things that he does that are egregiously bad are much less in number than a lot of people realize. You know, he couldn't use Jordan Romano last night. They didn't want him used. He couldn't use Yimi Garcia. You know, that changes the nature. He couldn't use Chad Green, which I think was the big one too, which people didn't understand until after the game that he had shoulder soreness. So, you know, when you have those constraints and aren't thinking about them, yeah, when Erik Swanson comes out to try to save a game, and when Tim Mays is the next guy up and he stays in, you know, that doesn't compute to people. I completely understand that. But I think that if you actually look at what was actually going on, if you're actually interested in being fair to John Schneider, I think he doesn't look nearly as bad as a lot of the outrage would suggest.
Yeah, that's probably reasonable. I mean, I have a sort of a running theory here where I think that specifically Blue Jays fans are mad about the manager because a lot of the fans within those who pay attention to the Blue Jays are also fans of hockey. And I think that there is a lot more agency, I guess, that a hockey coach might have over the results of their team. And I think people expect John Schneider to be there smacking everybody on the ass and getting them fired up for a game against the Yankees, and they come and bear down and get it right. I kind of wonder if that's sort of it. But you also mentioned people are probably also just pissed at Ross Atkins or Mark Shapiro or the front office in general, whoever it is. And then whether it's Schneider or the hitting coach, Mattingly, whoever, they kind of take a lot of they take a lot of the brunt of that. And sticking with Atkins, he took a lot of heat in the offseason for his additions. People had very high expectations given how the team's offense was sort of mediocre last season, underwhelming, not what we had seen in previous years. And then after not getting Shohei Ohtani, a lot of us expected, oh yeah, it'll be Juan Soto, something like that. But it winds up being Justin Turner, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and Yariel Rodriguez, and people weren't happy with it. But a few weeks into the season, those three guys have all looked pretty good. Rodriguez had his, you know, his debut against Colorado, looked solid. Justin Turner has been probably their best hitter early on. IKF's been a better hitter than people would expect and really good defensively. What are your thoughts so far on these three additions? And do you think people were too hard on Atkins' offseason?
I don't know if I agree. I think the jury's out on whether they were too hard. I mean, we'll see what the results bring, because, you know, Kiermaier return, I mean, even though it's way too early to give up on him, that's not looking as great. But yeah, IKF as hit, I think that, you know, it would be foolish to say, oh, this is a new baseline for him, you know, being a good hitter when he's never had, you know, I think his career weighted runs created plus is 82. Just not a guy who can be a productive offensive player. I mean, maybe he can put up a batting average that's hollow, but is like not completely awful, but just not a productive offensive player. But yeah, it's nice to see, and I think the defense is really bearing out. You know, what we've seen in his numbers is that he played basically over his entire career like a season's worth of innings at third base, and the metrics were really, really good there. And I think that's bearing out. And, you know, for a team that has really invested in defense and thought, you know, for just sort of made that weird switch after 2022 to be like, okay, I guess we're a defense first team. We're get rid of the fun guys who hit home runs and let's like play defense, which, man, I mean, jury's out on that too. It surely isn't entertaining, but it's at least a little more entertaining when they actually are like scoring runs and like providing insurance runs and like making ball games not just a complete slog, which I think for the most part, especially after that Houston series and especially on this homestand, has been better. But like that can work. Rodriguez, absolutely very impressive. I mean, the Rockies lineup isn't the greatest, and I think there are, you know, bigger tests to come, obviously, but you really had to be impressed with the stuff and with you know, the way that he's able to locate and the arsenal he had, the hesitations, the arm angle switches. I think that was like a really really impressive first outing from a guy who, like, yes, he was a closer in Japan, and I think that obviously he looks like he could certainly fall back into a high leverage relief role if that was the case. But I think they're right to be exploring this, and you know, nothing has happened with him yet to make you think that, you know, the floor of that contract is really high and it's probably going to end up looking pretty good. So, you know, sorry, who's the other? I'm blanking.
Justin
the other
Turner.
Guy. It was Justin Turner. Yeah, I mean, what can you say about Justin Turner? Far. Yeah, he's been fantastic. Another one I don't expect to continue, but I was saying this on Blue Jays Happy Hour this week. You know, he's a guy who, you know, you don't, you know, the idea of clutch players, I mean, it's a thing that's been, you know, beaten into us for years through like decades of narrative and writing about being, this guy's clutch. He, you know, he elevates his game in the biggest moments, and that just, you know, statistically doesn't really bear out. But Turner is a guy who maybe is like an exception that proves the rule a little bit. Like, if you look at over, I think, the last 2-3 years or 4 years, or depending where, even where you cut it off, like, I think his weighted runs created plus, I think, since 2021 is about 125, and with runners on or runners in scoring position, it's like 152. Like, he genuinely does have something in his game where he does seem to have that knack, and that's, you know, the data is getting more compelling. You know, it's you can't look at just 1 year and make conclusions like that. You know, you can't look at what the Blue Jays did last year, which really, in terms of runners in scoring position, was only, there was a trough in the middle of the season, and they were great with runners in scoring position in August and September. So it's not something that's a thing that probably gets to the Schneider stuff too, is where it's sort of a lot of people will that are not noticed the good stuff, and it just all has continued to sort of feel like the same bad things that have been happening for the last year with this team, where that's not necessarily the case. But yeah, Turner, what can you say? He's been great. But also, and I think we'll talk about this too, like not a guy who brings the home run power. And so that kind of was a thing where we may in the end be like, okay, maybe we would have preferred a Jorge Soler or a JD Martinez or some of the other names that were being bandied about this offseason.
Yeah, that's actually a perfect segue to bring up another question I had. Your podcast co-host on Blue Jays Happy Hour, Nick Ashbourne, did a really interesting article at Sportsnet about how power is going to decide the Blue Jays' fate this season. So far, the team's only hit 16 home runs through 19 games, though. Dalton Varsho, that's a really encouraging one. four dingers so far, but like you mentioned, Justin Turner's not really doing it. Bo and Vlad aren't necessarily there just yet. What do you think about the team's power? Is it going to maybe be somebody from AAA like an Aurelvis Martinez coming up? He just hit that grand slam for the Buffalo Bisons. Where do you think this is going to come from?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question. I mean, ideally, it comes from Vlad and Bo, and I think obviously there's more to see from them, even though, you know, everybody thinks of Vlad as a disappointment, you know, of the last few years in particular since that big 2021. But that's a disappointment who's still like 20% better than league average. And so you will see more home runs from him. You won't, like, whenever people tend to look at him at his worst and be like, yeah, that's what he is now. And it's like, even his worst is not bad. Like, it averaged out to him being a pretty good hitter last year, even if it wasn't sufficient. And Bichette just hasn't really got going. So I think that will obviously help. But yeah, Turner's not going to be a guy in that regard. We still don't really know what the stadium is going to, how it's going to play, right? I mean, they're taking away, like, they took away a bunch of foul territory, which hopefully will you know, just at least be able to extend some plate appearances with more balls going into the stands that would have been otherwise caught in, like, the vast expanse of foul territory. So that might have a chance to, you know, just toss in a few extra dingers, you know, where necessary. But yeah, I think Martinez and Addison Barger in particular in AAA look like guys who, you know, really put a charge into a ball and can not, you know, I don't think anytime soon, I don't think we've got to be beating the drum for him, for Martinez or Barger to be up just yet. You really don't have a handle on, you know, until you get to 100 plate appearances or so, teams aren't really going to make fundamental changes like that. I mean, you think back last year, people were ready to run Brandon Belt out of town at this point of the year, and he ended up being probably their best hitter, right? So there's a lot to be said and a lot of still the season to be written, but those guys have, you know, historically been really good in terms of, like, striking the ball, producing exit velocity, Martinez in particular with power, you know, the home run power. So yeah, I think those are guys who could definitely come in and help. It might take an injury, or it might just, you know, they might force their hand. I don't think it's going to be, you know, we'll see, we're not going to probably see them in the first or second week of May, but those guys are really intriguing. And I think Nick is correct in diagnosing that, you know, the power thing is an issue. You know, I was talking about the runners in scoring position before. I think it's only them and the Tigers that have just a single home run with runners in scoring position. You know, that's something that was a big part of why they struggled last year, that, you know, had they just, you know, had a few fly balls turned into home runs with runners in scoring position throughout the middle of last season, it might not have felt completely different, but it would have been a different narrative and a different story. And those would have been very meaningful runs, I think, in a lot of cases, because their games were just so on the margins, like every single stupid night.
Yeah, that's the one thing we've kind of come. It's a very different Blue Jays, different version of the Blue Jays team than we've seen, obviously, in the past. I think a lot of fans, of course, are used to the 2015 team that was beating everybody just crazy. And then, of course, the 2021 team as well. There was all those huge games with all kinds of run scoring. Another name down in AAA Buffalo, and it's kind of a different topic to talk about than the exciting young hitters down there, is Alek Manoah is on his rehab assignment down in the minors. And yeah, he struggled pretty hard in his single A start with Dunedin, and then he went up to Buffalo and went 3 1/3, allows 4 runs on 8 hits. Not necessarily what you want to see, but I guess the encouraging thing is Kevin Gausman looked good against the Yankees, and Yariel Rodriguez, who we talked about, did well against Colorado. What is going to be next for Alek Manoah, you think? Is this going to wind up being a situation, because he can't just stay in AAA on the injured reserve for, you know, months. There's going to be a limit to the amount of time he can pitch, and then they're eventually going to have to decide, okay, are we going to option him? And that was a drama last year. So what would you expect out of this situation?
Yeah, I would hope that he's, you know, realistic enough to understand that an option is really what's going to be necessary at this point. And there, I think, still could definitely be drama down the line. And Nick and I talked about this week as well. Like, yeah, he expects to be a big leaguer. He thinks he's a big leaguer. He was third, you know, finalist for the Cy Young. Like, that's pretty understandable, even if it means you have to ignore all of the recent results. So there may come a point where they think he's not ready yet, and he thinks he's ready, and there could still be that butting of heads, and that, I think, is something we're going to be watching all summer. But you know, first he has to get to that point where it's convincing that he's ready, and I don't think it is there yet, right? I mean, he did have better velocity in one of his rehab starts. I think the first one, the second one was back more in like last year's territory, but and you know, he didn't walk guys, he didn't hit guys. That was good, but I don't necessarily know that means his command was any better. He allowed 4 runs on 8 hits against, you know, a AAA lineup, didn't last super long. So, you know, there was a little bit of a step forward, but it was not enough of one to really think that a corner has been turned or anything like that. I mean, it could happen, but I definitely, I mean, speaking of like where my brain was at last week, I looked at Kevin Gausman and thought, you know, that's going to come together. Like the all these components, the swing and miss, the velocity sort of came up in his second start. And like a lot that was there that was indicating that I think Gausman was just going to be Gausman, and it seems to have borne out. And I think that he should be fine going forward. Manoah is a different story. And Manoah is a guy, like he's, especially if the velocity is down, you know, like Yusei Kikuchi can throw it in the zone and make mistakes in the zone. He doesn't necessarily have the greatest command. He doesn't necessarily know where it's going in a precise way all the time, but he can get away with that because his stuff is so good. And Manoah, I'm not, like, you know, he doesn't have the finest command either. You know, he's always hitting guys, you know, walks have not been a problem, but like his stuff needs to be deceptive and strong enough that that it's not, you know, that he can get away with mistakes. And it looked like he didn't do that in the triple A start that he made, the rehab start. And if that's not there, I mean, he was on his way up, especially, and particularly in 2022, even like after, you know, his brief spell in the minor leagues, you know, he was a guy who was like striking out everybody. He was like a 10 strikers per nine kind of guy, or 11 or something like that. Like it was much more impressive in that sense. And then I think supposedly in the name of like efficiency, and he became more of a guy over the last couple of years who was going to pitch to contact, or not necessarily pitch to contact, but induce weak contact. And that was sort of the key to his game. That was the key to his 2022 when he was so great. Was the fact that, you know, guys, he wasn't striking out a ton of guys, but they weren't putting good swings on his pitches, and I think that's just a finer margin, a finer line to have to walk, right? Like it's just so much tougher when you don't have that big strikeout stuff, which is something that he had previously, and it's weird that it's gone away, but. I think that's going to make it tough for him. It's just, you know, you run the risk of getting BABIPed, which might have been what happened in Buffalo. You know, we'll have to see a few more results before we can really feel it. But I don't know. In my mind, I'm almost kind of like anything that happens in the good sense with him, if anything he can contribute at this point is sort of a nice surprise, which is a shame and not the way you want to think about it. But I mean, I don't know where else they go with it. Like they can't bring him up, and even if he has a couple of good starts in Buffalo, Yariel Rodriguez and, you know, the health of the other pitchers is going to determine whether there's a spot for him.
Yeah, it's amazing how much this narrative has shifted. It was Alek Manoah, of course, finishes as I think it was third place in Cy Young voting during that really good season in 2022. Last year, of course, opening day starter, gets lit up, goes down to the Florida Complex League. It was such a big thing because it was going down to the Florida Complex League, just the way it was, you know, described, the way it looks, and then comes back up right around the All-Star break, looks solid, but kind of falls back into it and then goes back down. It's weird now. It's amazing. It was last year we were talking like, oh yeah, like, is he going to return to that like ace level? And now we're pretty much just sitting here talking about, hey, could he be a fifth starter at some point? Maybe. It's really hard to say, but Yariel Rodriguez, a very interesting one. He will kick off this series against the San Diego Padres, which begins on Friday, April 19th. This is going to be an interesting road trip. The Padres are, like Brett talked about, kind of an up and down team, and the Kansas City Royals this year are actually pretty good. So it's going to be a four-game set in Kansas City, which is probably my least favorite place to watch baseball. What are you hoping for across these seven games? Just like a win both series, kind of keep the thing rolling. Like I'm surprised to be going into a series against the Royals where I feel anxious. I haven't felt that way since 2015.
Yeah, no, that's 100% true. But I'm with you on that. Yeah, that's, I don't even know if you can call it a trap series. I mean, that's what the Rockies one felt like. And then they fortunately pulled it out after the first disaster and you know, the opening game. But yeah, I think for a lot of this, the whole season ahead, basically, I think they're a mediocre-ish team that is going to, you know, sink or swim based on whether the offense ever actually gets hot for a bit or not. Like the pitching and the defense are going to be there every night. That's consistent. And, you know, if they can get the hitting that they need, then they'll be fine. But until that happens, they're just going to muddle along. And I think what I want out of these games, besides, you know, just wins, I want the discourse to be less poisonous. And I would like to just see, you know, just bank some wins early in the season. Why can't the Blue Jays be the team that the Orioles were last year? The Blue Jays and the Orioles, the Jays had a better weighted runs created plus as a team than the Orioles last year. That everyone's like, oh, that lineup's so stacked. It's like, no, they, you know, I mean, yes, they're graduating really, really excellent prospects, and they're a better team this year than they were last. But it's crazy. They just scored so much fewer runs because they had those problems with runners in scoring position, right? I mean, not even like the Jays out-homered the Orioles last year, which is, it seems crazy to think because of just the way the two teams and the two offenses are thought about. So, you know, and the Orioles just like, other teams, the Red Sox we see all the time, the Yankees, I think, in years as well, where they play above, you know, where they should. They play above their heads for a long time and for long periods and bank a lot of wins and do things that, you know, make it easier for the rest of the season. And, man, it would be nice to see the Blue Jays do that for once when they maybe don't deserve it, because they do deserve it, because I can't remember in all of my years, you know, covering this team, which is now almost, you know, closing in on 20, is like, I don't remember them having that season where, you know, they just got a lot of luck in that sort of way. So that would be nice. That would be a nice thing to see. Obviously, you know, who knows, but I mean, I think they have the tools and the talent to do well. But they're just, until Vlad starts really hitting, or unless Varsho wants to be the guy he was this week, or Alejandro Kirk comes back, or Danny Jansen actually stays healthy and hits like Danny Batts, until that all really kind of comes together, which it still can. And I think people don't appreciate the fact that it still can, because they were just so beaten down by last year and how frustrating it was, and having Ross Atkins be like, we think it's going to get better, and then it just literally never did, except with runners in scoring position, as I noted earlier. You know, it's just, they're just going to muddle along, and they're probably going to hang near 500, and hopefully they'll get a patch where they can push that up into where, if they, once they keep muddling along around 500 after that, it'll be enough, they'll be high enough above it that they'll be in the playoff conversation come September and or come July at the trade deadline too. And then they can really, you know, try to make some hay of it. But that, you know, that seems like the roadmap for this season, unless the bats really come to life.
Yeah, that's kind of what we got to hope for. It's been
it's not really a great entertainment product, no. If you put it that way, is it?
But at the very least, what the Blue Jays have done is they've made it a lot easier to go to games and not necessarily pay attention to the Blue Jays when you're at the game. So that's the positive thing that they've done here.
Yeah.
Andrew, thanks for joining us. This was really great. Everyone can read Stoughton's stuff at the Bat Flip, your Substack. You had a really good post this morning that came out kind of breaking down why that loss to the Yankees happened. So if it's the mid-afternoon of Thursday and you're still pissed off about that Yankees game, like a lot of people probably are, I'd recommend going and giving that a read. And you guys just also recently dropped a new Blue Jays happy hour. I think it was on Monday, So Tuesday, give that a listen as well.
Nonetheless,
Tuesday?
Yeah.
Tuesday.
Still, so it's even fresher still.
Yeah, it's still fresh if you want to go and enjoy the vibes of that podcast. Anyways, it'll be three against the San Diego Padres, and then we will be back on Monday morning. I think Tyler will be back from his trip by then, but I'm not 100% sure. I actually don't know where he's gone. But anyways, thanks everyone for listening, and best wishes.
Thanks for tuning in to Blue Jays Nation Radio. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.